Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And today's program is in defense of fat.
Mm-hmm.
Which...
Well, and...
There's got to be some nutritionist somewhere who's just throwing stuff at the wall right now. I definitely try really hard to eat healthy, but I'm not going to skip fat as proper part of a meal. Let's talk basics. If you're cooking, people think the first basic thing about fats, you're cooking in fat. You're cooking in a saute pan or a fry pan or a skillet or something like that. You're going to cook a bunch of vegetables. You're going to cook a chicken thigh. You're going to cook a piece of fish. A lot of people think, oh, olive oil is healthy, so I'm going to cook with olive oil. And we talked about not cooking with extra virgin olive oil. So what are some good alternatives? We can just kind of bounce back and forth.
Peanut oil is great, unless you're, you know, a lot of people are allergic to peanut oil. So if you have guests coming over, you probably want to cook in something else, just unless you know that they're not allergic. So, but peanut oil has some good flavor, albeit without producing too much flavor into the food. But canola oil is a nice neutral oil. Corn oil is a nice neutral oil, and very few people have an issue. Actually, I've never heard of anybody telling me they couldn't have either one of those. So I'm sure there's someone out there, but it would be pretty uncommon. So those are great. Again, they have a high flash point. They're great for cooking, and that's what I would use to answer your question.
A high flash point means that you can heat it to several hundred degrees before the oil starts to break down and lose the characteristics that you want it to have to help conduct heat to the to whatever the product is that you're cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And there was a time
so you're looking for neutrality and you're looking for a high flash point.
Mm-hmm.
So peanut, canola,
corn.
You see safflower sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Grapeseed oil, right. And the other thing about oil is that you really aren't going to use that much of it. So just make sure you're not, you know, cooking in too much fat. If you're sauteing something, it should be enough fat to coat the bottom of the pan, and your product should be dry. If it's a scallop or something that might have sat in a tiny bit of liquid on a pan or something, you know, you just pat it with a paper towel before you put it into the pan so that you have less splatters. That's one of the things about cooking at high heat and fat.
People struggle with putting the right amount of fat in a pan. They'll put too much. And you end up sort of like shallow frying something.
Right, and that's not what you want to do when you're sauteing.
Or you'll end up putting too little, and then you're burning product, and you never conduct the heat evenly because you don't have enough fat in the pan.
You want to feel that the pan has been well coated on the bottom, you know, when you run the fat around the pan. And if there's a lot excess in the corner, if you were to tip it, then that's too much fat. You want a little bit excess, but not much. And again, you know, maybe even your product going into the pan has a marinade or something on it, or you put a little bit of oil and salt and pepper on it, you know, so then you're going to consider that as well. And that is something you have to do before you grill. You have to, you know, really oil your product down. But again, you can't over-oil your product because then it will just flame up on the grill and taste like kerosene. So that's cooking with fat.
So and essentially cooking with fat for sauté purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And there are times when you're going to want to cook in butter. And all you really need to do to have a higher higher burning point with butter is to remove the milk solids and the water. So
you're talking about cooking in clarified butter.
Right. So
this is flipping open the Julia Child recipes and that all say, you know, cook XYZ product in clarified butter. And that's a relatively old school French way of cooking an awful lot of things from the north and from the center of France, because butter's abundant and very high quality. And so to prepare clarified butter, what do you do?
You can melt it gently and skim the solids off the top, and you will also have the milk product go to the bottom of the butter. So at that point, you can either pour it off and leave what's in the bottom of the pan and discard it, or you can boil it. But I think that's probably harder for people. So I would just gently melt it and separate the fat from the solids.
So it's what looks like oil. That's what the clarified butter is.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that looks somehow milky or
scummy. It almost looks scummy.
You don't want that product. So then you have that clear product
That's what will burn first. That's why you're getting rid of it. Right.
So if you want to do a sole meunier or something like that in a pan, you need clarified butter to do that correctly.
Definitely.
So you have your fish, you season it, you pat it down with flour, and it goes into the nice hot fat pan with the
But if you want to turn around and serve that sole with brown butter, you need to have solid butter. You need to have whole butter to make the brown butter. So you will now want to just throw either in that same pan after the fish is cooked and it's removed and you've knocked out the fat out of the old fat out of that pan. You can add fresh whole butter to it and allow that to brown and add lemon juice. And then you have brown butter, lemon brown butter, or you can do it in a separate pan. Either way, and allow it to brown.
So let's talk animal fats. That to me is sort of the mystery fat for a lot of people, because for me, I grew up with that, you know, that great grandmother who there was one jar after the other underneath the sink.
Yeah, definitely.
of chicken fat, you know, you hear it called schmaltz sometimes, mm-hmm. of duck fat, of goose fat, of pork fat,
beef fat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, veal fat. I'm like,
wonderful things to.
And she would use them in different pastry. Like if she's making she'd make pot pie, she'd use the fat from half the fat from the animal and half butter to make the crust for the pot pie.
Sounds good.
For whatever the animal was. So if she was doing pot pie with chicken and chicken livers, you know, the crust would be made with some of the chicken fat as well as the butter, which I don't know that it was exactly the healthiest thing I ever ate, but it wasn't the worst thing I ever ate, I guarantee you.
And those fats are nice to have for biscuits, too. When you're making biscuits, it's good to have, you know, a little bit of chicken fat or whichever you prefer.
Yeah, duck fat and biscuits is pretty.
Or pork fat.
Duck fat has a certain sweetness to a pork fat, of course.
I love duck fat. You know, we cook a lot in duck fat. We do a lot of our potatoes in duck fat.
That's sort of the sneaky thing that people can do. It's funny, you think about doing. You want to do burgers that are healthier for like family or something like that to make a chicken burger or a turkey burger. The problem is you go to form it and there's no fat. But if you have a little bit of rounded off duck fat, you sneak that in there.
Yes.
It all works out.
Right. Right.
And the thing is that it kind of like it's going to be what melts out in the pan, just like any other burger that you might cook. But you end up tossing that burger around in the duck fat. Which really doesn't hurt that nice lean chicken or turkey meat that, you know, that you made the burger out of for a second.
Well, I'm talking about animal fat. You know, when you're making pate, if you make it at home, that would be probably pretty rare. But if you were, you know, you need a certain amount of fat in your force meat in order to have a good pate that has good texture. So that's another use for fat.
Making
sausages.
Making pate at home. Sausage is one thing, but making pates at home is sort of like the Don Quixote of cooking because not everybody in the world wants that necessarily, and it is a lot to produce.
It is. It's a lot of work.
You know,
and you have to have a meat grinder.
Hopefully you have an event for it. Yes, and
you have to have a meat grinder. That's not the easiest. But you can't get an attachment for your...
Maybe a force meat funnel, you know, that's...
For your mixer. Well, it's not that. I mean, you can even get a pasta attachment for your mixer, too, so if you...
But I sidetracked you on the fats used for the...
For the meats, yeah. I mean, with sausages, you know, it's probably 20% at least fat. And if you're grinding your own meat for hamburger, if you are doing something like that, maybe you've got buffalo or you just, you know, want to make a deer burger or whatever, you know, you have to... Those are lean animals. They need a huge amount of fat, actually, to make those burgers edible.
It's not that they don't have flavor, because the meat has intense
flavor. Tons of flavor, yeah.
But there's no texture. If you have no texture, you can't deliver that flavor. That's sort of the point. I mean, that's... Fat serves as that, like, the flavor delivery agent. Fat may not be exactly flavor. It has flavor, but it actually allows you to notice it. It's a little bit like seasoning food.
Mm-hmm.
It maybe in its own way, it is sort of part of seasoning food.
Well, I think that's also when you're looking for ground meat. You know, if you don't want to grind your own at home, when you're looking for it, you want to know what the fat content is so that you know what you're getting into when you go to cook something. You know, do you need to add more fat? Do you need to maybe put a little bit of bacon in something, you know, or whatever you could add that you already have at home? Or if you happen to have a tub of duck fat, you could, you know.
Yeah.
And you can buy that at the grocery store. It's available.
So in your refrigerator at home, you have... The cream with the heavy cream on top. You have a pot of duck fat and a bottle of good champagne.
Have you seen my refrigerator?
No.
Seems like it.
Is that what's going on?
There are three different types. There are three different types of butter. My refrigerator is empty unless I'm cooking, first of all, pretty much. But I have to have some staples, which for me is breakfast food. So, yes, I have three different types of butter, salted, unsalted, high fat, lower fat. And I absolutely have duck fat and, you know, typically something else, whatever that might be. something from the restaurant that I saved, or bacon fat that I saved from breakfast, or whatever. And I have three different types of olive oil at all times. I have to have different types of olive oil. It's a sauce. It's the same thing. It's a sauce. I think of it as a sauce. So it needs to have different tastes.
I know one of the things that when we started getting there's a particular olive oil that I found for one of the restaurants that I thought was the biggest deal in the world. And I told them I'd take care of it when we brought it to the States. So we put it in a refrigerated container, just like you would, you know, very fine wine. And we brought it in, and we had it brought to the restaurant, and we put it in the wine cellar. And we keep it in the wine cellar because it's 55 degrees. So it's not under lights, and it's not in a pantry that varies in temperature in a kitchen or something like that. And I know when we first started doing that, everyone working in that restaurant thought I was completely out of my mind. But every time you pour that oil into a plate for a client,
it's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I just said, please just pick it up and smell the plate.
It was like liquid gold. It was gorgeous.
Besides the color maintaining, just the aroma alone.
Sure.
Is completely remarkable.
I mean, liquid gold in form of value. I mean, it was just it was a beautiful thing. Yeah, very flavorful, pretty.
I mean, that handling those things at temperature, I always feel bad. It's like you want to handle really good olive oil or really good nut oils, not just like any old pantry item. I mean, you need to have them in a cooler place. You need to not have them in direct light. I mean, they will break down.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question they'll break down.
I think that's one of the things, you know, people come into my kitchen in my house and there's nothing on the countertop. I have everything put away because I want to have as much work area as possible. My kitchen is beautiful, but it's simple. And I keep just the amount of olive oil that I don't have more than one bottle of each. I may have three, but I use a lot of olive oil, whether you think I do or not. And I go through it pretty rapidly. If I didn't, I wouldn't keep three different types of olive oil. I would just have one. But I do have a pretty cold cellar, which is where, you know, I store my wine and at home. And thankfully, you know, that's a perfect place for backups. If you're having a party, you know, whatever, you want to buy things ahead, that is a nice place to store a lot of things. I mean, obviously, that's where root cellars are. You know, that's where everyone used to store their product before refrigeration or in, spring houses.
With butter, I think, you know, the other thing about you're talking about having three different kinds of butter. Imagine that you had like some kind of casserole with a bunch of onions go into your fridge and your butter was in there not wrapped up tight. What happens to that butter? You know what I mean? That's
right. No, everything.
That's a tough thing. I think if you're going to spend the money to have really fantastic butter, or if you want to have butter that you can use for pastry, even doesn't have to be the most expensive stuff in the world, and you're going to use that for pastry, and you probably don't want it to smell like last night's Kung Pao chicken or the half the fried bologna sandwich, which some of us may love those things.
God, that would be in your refrigerator.
It could land there once in a while. Yeah.
Yeah, you need to keep that butter stored
properly.
There is
fat in a fried bologna sandwich,
and wrapped up and covered, definitely.
Let's go from some of the basics and a little bit of basic techniques of how to use fat and sautéing and all that kind of business and how to store things. Let's take a few moments and let's talk about the exotics. I know you love to talk about the exotics. That's right. You know what I'm talking about, nut oils. Avocado oil extract.
Oh, God, I've never used that in my life.
Right?
Yeah.
I guarantee you my grandmother had avocado oil that she probably bought in 1972.
Oh, gosh.
That's used for one recipe that terrified everyone that came to some cocktail party.
Aw.
And was definitely still there in like 1988 when I opened her pantry. And I cannot even describe what it smelled like. But fresh, it's pretty interesting stuff.
Okay.
And fresh, it's actually nice on like a piece of grilled fish or something. If you if you have a pretty lean fish like a wahoo or a swordfish or something, and you're grilling that, say, medium, and you get a little bit of a char on that, a little bit of black pepper, fresh lemon, avocado oil, is pretty darn nice and simple. I think of them as being sort of exotics. Are there certain ones that you like to use the best?
Well, you've already mentioned walnut oil. I mean, I haven't used walnut oil in a long time, but I used to use it all the time.
It's hard to get it really fresh.
Yeah, I love good walnut oil, and definitely pistachio oil. I had someone send me a number of samples of different oils, and they were actually doing a really good job with it, and they were really fresh. And gosh, pistachio oil can be so very pretty. But yeah, you just have to determine that it's nice and fresh. But any of the nut oils really are appealing. And then, you know, I can't help but think when I start thinking of a nut oil, then I start thinking of balsamic vinegar and apple vinegar and, you know, different types of fruit vinegars that just go so beautifully with the nut oil. So it's such an, I think when people
just
come
to make a little bit of a wacky dressing for a
exactly.
simple salad.
Yeah, and it's so easy to make a dressing, you know, and I think people might be a little bit you know, I think they feel challenged by it. I'm just thinking of my own family
because people want to put 11 things in something.
Yeah, it's so simple to make a vinaigrette. And, you know, even when my family's there, we'll have maybe a salad with, you know, it's a couple of different greens and fresh apples. And, you know, because I have a Persian member in my family, we eat a lot of dried fruit and fresh fruit and nuts and herbs, you know, always whole pieces of mint in. And, you know, this wonderful salad that's already really sort of really beautiful, really only needs good extra, you know, honestly, I would dress something like that with extra virgin olive oil, salt and pepper, and that's the end of the story. And, you know, if you bring in a fruit vinegar or you bring in fresh lime juice, I mean, one of my favorite dressings is simply fresh lime juice with good extra virgin olive oil and salt and pepper. And that's what I will eat with a lot of things like tomatoes or greens, especially a spicy green. And I think also when you think about how are you using your oil, you're thinking about all the other products, obviously. And if you have a spicy green like arugula or a cress that has that sort of almost inherent horseradishy flavor to it, you're getting so much flavor from that.
You don't need
a lot of acid in your dressing. So That's where the oils really do come in, and tossing something like that with walnut oil would be really pretty. And then you know what, you're crumbling a little bit of goat cheese on, or you have a good piece of aged Reggiano that you grate onto your salad or whatever you choose, and then you have something that really is very delicious and lots of flavor.
It's funny, I have a weird little story about hazelnut oil. There's a little tiny restaurant in Piemonte in the north, and hazelnut trees are everywhere. And these guys would do, like, one of the things they do when you sit down is they would toast the hazelnuts in a pan to the point of rendering out some of the oil fresh from the nuts, and then toast bread, a particular bread that they made, in that same pan.
In the pan?
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
And it's like, I'm like, okay, here we are. It's like, okay, this is 2,000-year-old technology.
That sounds good.
And your first antipasti is to get this piece of bread.
Okay.
There could be no more simple, slow food. It's like, okay, fresh bread that we made and fat from the nuts that grow on our trees that we literally just cracked to toast in the pan to render the oil. You know, it's just like giant steel pan.
Sounds good.
I mean, just like that's just the most ridiculous.
I love things that are simple and beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, there's zero breakdown of the oil because the oil is never even cooled from being rendered. It was not extracted. It wasn't heat extracted, pressure extracted. It's just the most basic possible function, you know. And then those the nuts themselves, they candy them and they give them to you at the end.
Oh, that's nice.
So you end up with the same.
That's
it's
cool.
Like the same ones. Like it's a very simple restaurant, very simple menu, but that's always starts and always ends the same way. And you walk in the place and it's surrounded by the hazelnut trees. You know, you talk about product
beautiful.
Of the environment.
Yeah, that's great.
But I don't know how you refuse to, how you walk in there on a low-fat diet, I don't know.
Apparently you don't.
You start with a piece of bread fried in the nut oil that they are making for you in the middle of the room.
Happy people.
So when we come back, we're going to get into the mysteries of deep fat frying on Formidable Phone Food and Wine.